This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back, 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 back again. Sadie's back, back, back. Tell a friend, friend, friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, I'll give you some takeaways from last night's Home Run Derby. And tonight is the Major League Baseball All-Star Game, which you can hear right here on ESPN Radio. Why tonight's All-Star Game may not even be the most important for any of the baseball players, but actually the most important for the Phoenix Suns. What does tonight's baseball All-Star game have to do with the NBA Finals? Get to that coming up. Also have another pair of tickets to give away for the River Dogs, their Thirsty Thursday game this week. Do that later on this hour, and plenty more to get to throughout this hour. The Morrow Midday Show is brought to you by Baker Roofing. They have been in business for over 100 years. They're one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors in the U.S., and they provide residential and commercial roofing. In 1915, Baker Roofing Company was founded on the promise of always good work. So give our friend Matt Johnson, general manager of Baker Roofing Charleston, a call, or head on over to bakerroofing.com for more information. Check out their incredible history and to see all the different roofing types that are available online at bakerroofing.com. Over 100 years of always good work, Baker Roofing, bringing you the Morrow Midday Show each and every day. So to take you behind the curtain, right, as a radio host, I'm not the best with clock management. I'm the Will Muschamp of ESPN Radio Charleston. I'm not the best with the clock management. So we were a little rushed at times last hour. Quickly, let me circle back to a couple of things we discussed last hour. I said it on the way out at the top of last hour, but Rob Manfred, talking to the media, said that seven-inning doubleheaders are not part of the future, that they were instituted for health and safety reasons. So I imagine after this year, they will remove those seven-inning doubleheaders, which would be nice. I prefer that. Additionally, Manfred also suggested, he didn't come out and actually say it, but he did suggest the extra inning rule could be done as well after this year. I would like that as well. Or if you want to keep that rule, push it back. Right, like in soccer, people don't like the penalty kicks, but we don't go right to the penalty kicks. You play two overtime periods first, then PKs. Same with hockey. Right, you get an overtime first, then you go to the shootout. We usually don't jump right to that. So for baseball, if you want to keep it, at least push it to the 11th, if not the 12th inning. And then the idea becomes just like penalty kicks. Like, we don't want these guys out here playing for 3 hours. Just like for baseball, you get to the 12th inning, it's like, all right, let's do something to try to speed this up. Even that I could live with. See, I'm willing to compromise. I would do that. But I do not like to start the 10th inning with a runner at second base. That does not appear to be part of the future either. The reason why baseball put these rules in place was because of the pandemic. And this year, they're still feeling the effect of the pandemic because a lot of guys only pitched, you know, very few innings last year, are stretched out more this year. You're trying to save some arms. But after this season, you hope to get back to a more normal baseball season, where this year has been very normal, except, you know, injuries are up. Guys aren't stretched out. They only had to worry about 60 games last year, now 162 this year. We're seeing a bunch of injuries, especially with pitchers. Right, Clayton Kershaw just went on the IL. Zach Greinke just got injured before the All-Star break. Ryan Weathers in San Diego got injured on Sunday. There are a lot of injuries over the weekend as guys were wearing down. A lot of pitchers need this All-Star break. So those rules were put in place for those reasons. They may not be part of the sport here moving forward, and I would be a fan of that. Also, we have the CBA coming up this offseason. So the players, I don't know where they line up. I think they would actually like those rules because it seems like the baseball players want to get these games over with as well at times. So I don't know where they're, what side of the aisle they're on with these rules, but with the CBA coming up, right, they may have something to say about it in a couple of months. And the other thing I just wanted to quickly circle back to was the Tuesday top 10 I gave you, the top 10 ballparks. Dan Wheeler joined us last hour, and he agreed about the history of Wrigley Field and Fenway Park. Are they the nicest stadiums? No. Are they the newest stadiums? No, they're actually the opposite. They're the oldest stadiums. And both stadiums, they've done a lot to renovate or to modernize the ballparks. As I said, when I went to Wrigley, it was before they even added the video boards. They had no video boards when I went to Wrigley Field. They just had that random huge scoreboard that does nothing in center field. I'm sure it's even nicer now with the video boards, but it's what I appreciated. I appreciate there were no video boards. It was old school. You had the ivy. Everyone was singing. You had these old crappy seats, but you enjoyed it because it was Wrigley Field. Right? You got a hot dog from the – you got a couple of drinks in you. You got to be careful, like the unbalanced, the uneven concourse because the ballpark's so old. There's, like, bumps. Right? It's like an old crappy road you have to drive on. It's same with, like, Fenway. You walk in the old nasty concourse. Some nasty dark waters falling on you as you go to get a hot dog. But there's just something about being there, about the history of it. After that, the newer ballparks are all beautiful, of course. And when I say newer, even within the last 20 years, like Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, the Nationals, Petco out in San Diego with the Padres, Camden Yards is a little older. That's about 25, close to 30 years now, but that's still a very nice ballpark. It's getting towards the older side. All the stadiums are new. I have not been to the Braves Stadium. So, unfortunately, I can't include the Braves. I've been to it. I haven't been inside it. I was there when they were still building it. I was in town for work, and we were staying right down the road from it. But that was before it opened. They were still in the process of building it, and I got to see the beginning of it. But I haven't been there for a game, and I'm sure it is just as beautiful as any of these other ballparks because all the new ones are. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand, ESPN Radio Charleston. However you listen to your podcast, just search ESPN Radio Charleston. You can also find the show on demand online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page. Or you could download our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Download the app, and it will allow you to not only listen live, but you can find the show on demand there. The podcasts are available on the app. Sometimes we start the final hour getting you caught up on how we started the afternoon with the biggest stories of the day.
The Big Two at Two, where Luke recaps the two biggest stories of the day right here on the Morrow Midday Show.
I do want to spend a few moments on the Home Run Derby once again. Pete Alonso won last night, back-to-back champion, third guy to do that. We'll see if he goes for a three-peat next year. But a couple of takeaways from last night's Home Run Derby. Number one, I thought it was fun. I thought it was a fun experience. I actually enjoyed it. I don't know the last time I sat down and watched a full home run derby like I did last time. I thought it was enjoyable. I thought there was some drama. There was plenty of home runs. The championship was good. It came down to, you know, the extra time. Alonso walked it off. So you had some drama at the very end. You had a good field of participants. And Pete Alonso gets the win, back-to-back home run derbies. He's now made as much money off the derbies as he has actually playing Major League Baseball. He has made $2 million from his two home run derby victories. He has made $2.1 million just by playing 3 years with the Mets so far. So how about that? He's just doubled from two nights. From swinging the bat, hitting a bunch of home runs in a competition on two nights, he's doubled his bank account. I broadcasted Pete Alonso's games in the minors. I was in the same league as a broadcaster as he was at the time, and I remember he was a big prospect out of Florida. Big prospect, had that big build already. They were excited about him. And when we played him, he had gotten off to such a terrible start. He was batting like 120 and striking out in half of his at-bats. And it was the first time I watched him in person. I remember hearing about him. He was a big prospect. And I thought, this is the guy that the Mets are really excited about? He looks terrible. He was lost at the plate. That was the same series that Tim Tebow hit a walk-off home run against us. And that went viral. That was on SportsCenter and everywhere. But Pete Alonso, I watched him, and I thought, this is their big prospect? This guy is terrible. He struck out in half his at-bats that series. I don't think he got a hit against us all year. Fast forward a couple years later, and he's hitting 50 homers as a rookie in the big leagues. He has found that power stroke. It took him a little while in the minors to get acclimated, and now he's a big-time home run hitter. But congratulations to Pete Alonso. Afterwards, he said he called himself one of the best in home run derby competition history. He is one of the best, but he's not the best. That still belongs to Ken Griffey Jr. And even if Alonso three-peats, I still think it belongs to Ken Griffey Jr. He's the guy I think of when I think of home run derbies. Or when I think of a home run swing, I immediately think of Griffey Jr. Meanwhile, Shohei Ohtani was the other big star of this event. And while he didn't reach the championship, he didn't win, I think it's just impressive what he's doing. And we spoke about this last hour with Dan Wheeler, former big league pitcher, how Ohtani is doing both, pitching and hitting. But not only that, he's doing it all this week. I heard on Greeny they were talking about it this morning, and I think Hembo, you know, lost his temper. He had a freak out about players opting out of the All-Star game tonight. And Ohtani's doing the opposite. While everyone's getting up in arms about guys not wanting to be there at the All-Star game, especially those cheating Astros, Ohtani is saying, hey, whatever I can do, put me in the home run derby. Put me on the mound in the All-Star game. Let me bat as well as the DH. And I appreciate that. And I love that. And here's the opportunity for Major League Baseball to really showcase him for the second half of the season. He's not as big of a star or a coast-to-coast name as he probably should be with what he's accomplishing this year. Here's their chance to get him in front of a lot of baseball fans or just average sports fans that maybe haven't been paying attention. To see him last night, to see him tonight, to see what he can do both on the mound and at the plate and bring some more attention to one of the bigger stars, or at least what should be one of the bigger stars in the game. My third takeaway were the fans. How dangerous was it at Coors Field last night? If you were watching that thing, one fan tried to catch a home run ball very early on in the night, and he flipped over the railing and fell down into the walkway, like if you're going to the concession stand. Now, he got up quickly, and he seemed to be okay. He didn't land on his head, but that looked pretty gruesome. And they caught it on TV. Like, as you're watching, it was clear as day. You see this guy reach out to his right and flip over and fall. It could have been really bad. And then later on, they had to, like, carry one of the shaggers, if you will, one of the fans out in center field shagging the fly balls. They had to, like, carry them off the field because they got injured somehow. I don't think they ever showed a replay. I don't know how they got injured. But a fan got injured trying to track down those fly balls. So, dangerous night for the fans at Coors Field. The home runs were flying, and fans were getting hurt. And my last takeaway from the home run derby was for the viewer at home. I enjoyed the home run derby. But because of the new rules, where it's a time limit instead of number of outs, and they changed it this year where you don't have to wait for the previous ball to land before you could pitch the next one, it could make it a little confusing to watch at home. Right? It would be a lot better if you went one pitch at a time. Wait till it lands, show it on TV. Oh, that's how far he hit it. Okay, next pitch. Let's see where he hit. Just like when you're watching a baseball game, a regular game at home. Instead, it was rapid fire. Let's get as many pitches in as we can. And the cameras are trying to keep up. You have no idea which ball is which. There's two in the air at the same time. One's going to left field. One's going to right field. You're getting seasick just watching it. Right, the camera's moving all around. Oh, there's this one. Carl Ravitch was trying to keep up. He hits one to center. Oh, he hits one to left. Oh, there goes one to right. It was crazy. So that I did not enjoy. I thought they should go back to the old rule of you have to wait till the ball lands. Let's see. Everybody watch. See how far they hit that. Ooh, 500 feet. The other issue, too, was they didn't give you the distance. They used to do that. I don't know if they were having issues on the ESPN broadcast, but they used to show you the distance. I think they just couldn't keep up with the home runs. When the ball lands, that little marker would come up. Hey, that was hit 450 feet. They didn't do any of that last night. I think that would help. I read afterwards that Ohtani hit 6 home runs over 500 feet. I watched it last night. I had no idea. So from a viewer at home, I thought it was fun, but there were a few things lacking. Story number 2 today is the All-Star game tonight for Major League Baseball. But I don't think that this is even the biggest event for baseball. The All-Star game tonight, I don't believe, is the most important for baseball. I don't think it's the most important for the players in baseball. I think tonight's All-Star game is actually the most important for the NBA and their finals. Now, why is that? What does the baseball All-Star game have to do with the NBA finals? Well, I think the Suns can really benefit from an extra night off. If there wasn't an All-Star game tonight, game 4 of the NBA finals would be tonight. Because the rules are, when there's no travel involved, you only get one day off. When there is travel involved, you get 2 days off. But here, the Bucks and Suns get 2 days off without any travel. They're still in Milwaukee, and they'll play Game 4 there tomorrow night. Why did they get 2 days off in between? Because the All-Star game tonight. The NBA did not want to compete. And I think this helps the Suns. For their big three, they all played more than 41 minutes in Game 2, a victory, allowing them to go up 2-0. And that big three is Ayton, Paul, and Booker. Then they went to Milwaukee for Game 3 a couple of days later. And Devin Booker had his worst shooting performance of the postseason. He went 3 for 14. Devin Booker had played 40-plus minutes in 9 of the previous 10 games. Right? He's maybe a little worn out. Maybe that's why he was benched in the fourth quarter of Game 3. Then you have Chris Paul, who's 36 years old and with an injury history. And he's one of very few point guards at his age to play over 500 playoff minutes. The only others to do it, Jason Kidd 10 years ago, Gary Payton 15 years ago. It's rare for a guy that old to be playing this much, especially at this point at the end of a long season. And Chris Paul is already someone who has been burned by injuries in his postseason career. It was Game 4 against Golden State in the Western Conference Finals a few years back when he was with the Rockets, where Chris Paul played 41 minutes and then was injured in the next game two nights later. Was out for the rest of that year, and the Rockets blew that 3-1 lead as the Warriors went to the finals instead. Chris Paul played over 41 minutes in Game 2, did not play well in Game 3. Let's see how he fares here moving forward. He certainly could use an extra day off like they're getting today. And then there's DeAndre Ayton, who's the big guy, right? He's only 22, but, you know, anytime you're talking about seven-footers trying to get up and down the floor and banging in the post, they're doing hard work out there. DeAndre Ayton played 41 minutes in Game 2 as well, and he's one of very few true centers left in the league. And minutes are tough for those big guys at the end of a long season. Without Saric, they need more out of DeAndre Ayton, so he's playing more minutes. Prior to the NBA Finals, only once in his career did he ever play more than 40 minutes in a game. And he followed that up by missing the next week because of ankle soreness. He played over 40 minutes, and his ankles were too sore to play the rest of the week. So he played over 40 minutes in Game 2 of the Finals, was not great in Game 3. And the concern is, right, how fresh is he now moving forward? Well, he gets an extra day off tonight because of the All-Star game and could bounce back tomorrow. No true center has played 40-plus minutes in a Finals game since Tyson Chandler did a decade ago. And only four centers have done it this century. Shaq, Dwight Howard, Tyson Chandler, and Dikembe Mutombo. That's how rare the company is for DeAndre Ayton playing over 40 minutes in the NBA Finals. Big guys don't do it. And it's something he has never done before. Play over 40 minutes and then come back and play the next game. The bench is short for the Suns right now. They rely on their stars this time of year. Right? There's a lot on the line. You're pushing it. You're leaving it all on the floor to try to win a championship. But the concern would be, will this team wear down? Is that why they lost Game 3? Game 4 is huge. I mean, all these games are huge. But Game 4, if the Bucks win Game 4, well, it's a brand new series. Now it becomes a three-game series. If the Suns win Game 4, you're heading back home up 3-1. So for Phoenix to get this extra day of rest, hope these guys bounce back better in Game 4, maybe that makes the difference. Maybe that keeps them from fully wearing down as this series goes on. Maybe that's the only reason why they lost in the first place in Game 3, because their big three were worn out. They're not used to playing these minutes. It's been a long year. The guys aren't used to playing these minutes in general. Phoenix is asking for more from their stars than teams usually do. And they came back after traveling as well with not enough in the tank for Game 3. We'll see about Game 4 tomorrow. But who should appreciate the All-Star game the most? Not even the All-Stars who will be out there tonight, who will be honored at Coors Field. Maybe it's the Phoenix Suns, whose stars get an extra day of rest because the NBA did not want to compete with Major League Baseball's All-Star game. And they'll play Game 4 tomorrow night instead. Coming up, speaking of the NBA, you know, we've kind of adopted the New Orleans Pelicans around here. We obviously don't have an NBA team in this state. But we do have Zion Williamson and Ja Morant, and, you know, we used to have Kevin Garnett in the league and Ray Allen and these guys. So now that Zion Williamson and Ja Morant are in the league, at least here on the Mora Midday Show, we've kind of adopted the New Orleans Pelicans, even the Memphis Grizzlies, following those guys. When we come back, the New Orleans Pelicans believe, and they better hope, that they found the Zion Williamson savior yesterday. We'll get to that when we come back. It's the Mora Midday Show. Right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Mauro Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, the New Orleans Pelicans are hoping and believing they may have the new savior for Zion Williamson. We'll get to that here in the Mora Midday Show with Luke Mora on ESPN Radio coming up in just a moment. We were talking about headbanging music earlier, from headbanging songs to little Jackson Brown. But this is part of a great soundtrack for Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And, of course, they use this song, I think, multiple times throughout the movie, but the classic scene from the the pool house.
As well as the dugout.
The dugout, yeah.
Of course, all the scenes contain Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Yep.
Although she pales in comparison to the Phoebe Cates pool scene.
That's true. Great movie, though. A great soundtrack. A lot of songs that, I don't know, seem like kind of deep cuts. And there are certain songs from that movie I learned from that movie. Like Raised on the Radio by the Ravens. That was a song I had no idea until I heard it in that movie. And I thought, oh, that sounds pretty good. That's a good song there. Then there's the song Love Rules by Don Henley, which is a great song. It's in a good scene in that film, but you can't, like, find it anywhere. For a long time, whenever I want to listen to that song, I would have to actually bring up, a video on, I think it was Vimeo, one of those other, not on YouTube. It's not on YouTube. It wasn't on Apple Music. Maybe up there now. I don't know if Don Henley ever actually released it or if it was only for the movie. But for the long, it was the oddest thing. I could never find that song. Love Rules by Don Henley from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. It's a great song. Then you had Joe Walsh's Waffle Stomp. You had some kind of odd songs, but great songs. Classic movie, good soundtrack, and that was one of them. I was talking about the best swings. We were talking about the Home Run Derby earlier, and I was talking about the best swings. How swings in baseball just seem to be so much nicer from the left side of the plate. And I don't really know why, but that's Ken Griffey Jr. has the prettiest swing. But then you think of all sorts of other guys over the years. Right? Like Stan Musial was a left-hander. Even if you want to go back, Ty Cobb, you've probably seen it in the movies. Right? Stan Musial was a lefty. Mickey Mantle. Right? The Mick had a great swing. He was a lefty. Even Barry Bonds, his home run swing was pretty good. He was a lefty. Tony Gwynn, Lou Gehrig. You think back to like some of the more iconic batting stances or swings or guys that you would just like to see hit the baseball or you would try to copy their batting stance or their swing, their mechanics. You know, like Ted Williams. Lefty. Babe Ruth. And I'm not just talking about great lefties because there's obviously great right-handed hitters as well, but just watching them hit the ball, watching that swing. I think part of it may be because, like the classic Ichiro, you're on your way out of the box and down to first base, and maybe that's a little smoother than the righty swing of the follow-through and then like crossing home, ditching the bat. I don't know if that's it. I don't know if it's just Griffey, the way he would swing with his follow-through was just beautiful. Perfect. And then I guess because you could just trot right up the line. National Left-Handers Day is actually a month from today. I was curious when that was. But I always, of course, talk about Jerry Seinfeld, and I always think back to the first joke he ever wrote was about left-handers. You know, because baseball is actually a lefty sport. The left-handed swings are the prettiest. The left-handed pitchers get the most opportunities. There's always a need for lefty pitchers. So in baseball, being lefty is a good thing. But it was Seinfeld's very first joke when he said, you know, I'm left-handed. And I won't do the joke justice because the majority of it is actually the pacing and the delivery. But his very first joke is about how the word left is associated with negative things. Left feet, left-handed compliment. All right, what are we having for dinner? Leftovers. Nobody likes leftovers. You go to a party, no one is there. Where do they all go? They left. Meanwhile, righties, you know, right on. You're so right. Bill of Rights. You've never seen a criminal named Righty. Right is always good. Left is always the negative things. Poor left-handers. But in baseball, left is actually, I think, the better option. You get more opportunities as a pitcher and as a hitter. I don't know. There's just something about it. You got a prettier swing. Even like Shohei Ohtani's got a little bit of that. All right. So we've kind of adopted Zion Williamson and the New Orleans Pelicans. Zion is from South Carolina. He's one of the big stars in the NBA. We don't have an NBA team around here. So at least in the Moore Midday Show, we pay plenty of attention to Zion and his NBA career. And the Pelicans announced yesterday that they have found his new coach. Third coach in 3 years for Zion. Obviously not good for the development of a young player. Pelicans have to hope they nailed this one. Because we got stories that the Williamson family did not like Stan Van Gundy. Van Gundy was fired after a year. They didn't like his style. He was a yeller, kind of a hard worker. They didn't really like that. That didn't gel well with the Williamson family. So now the Pelicans go out and they hire Willie Green, who spent a number of years playing in the NBA, played for, I believe, the Atlanta Hawks at one point. And he's a former player, and he's a young guy, right? Younger, not a Stan Van Gundy. So he's a little bit younger, so he can relate. He's a former player, so he can relate to these guys. And as I've been saying all NBA offseason, the guys that continue to get the jobs are former NBA players. That's where we've gone in the NBA. Players appreciate that more. They respect that more. They want somebody that can relate to them, that has been in their shoes, that has gone through some of the things they're struggling with. Right? The coach gets that. It's what you would always say as a kid, right? When your parents would try to comfort you or whatever, try to give you advice, and you have no idea. You've never been through it before. You never had to worry about this or that. And a lot of times parents will use that as a parenting mechanism that they'll try to relate. Oh, there's a time when I was a kid, same thing happened to me. Oh, I remember when I was embarrassed in public as well. It's okay. Right? They always try to tell you that, make you feel better about the situation. It's the same idea with these NBA players. They want somebody on that bench who's been there before, who's done it. Willie Green has. Additionally, he's being hired from the Phoenix Suns coaching staff. So you have that connection where he played for Monty Williams and played with Chris Paul and now is coaching for Monty Williams and coaching Chris Paul for a Phoenix Suns team in the NBA Finals. So those are nice references to have on the resume. And all sports are copycat leagues. I mean, really all industries are kind of copycat industries. But in the NBA, we see this in the NFL. All sports, when a team wins, you either try to poach their coaches or you just try to copy their style one way or another. You see a team get to the finals. You see a team win the championship, win a Super Bowl, and you think, okay, how do they get there? Because that's what we have to do. Or, you know, oh, we can't hire Bill Belichick, but he's winning all the Super Bowls. Let's hire his assistant. We can't hire Greg Popovich, but they're the best team in the league. Let's get his assistant instead. And that's how these people get these jobs. So same idea here. The Pelicans are thinking, we need a new coach. Where should we look for him? Oh, look at that. The Phoenix Suns turned their team around in one offseason. They're doing it with some youth. They're in the NBA Finals now. That sounds kind of similar to our situation here in New Orleans. We got some young talent. We've been towards the bottom of the league the last couple years. We'd love to turn things around. We would love to compete for an NBA championship. Let's go poach one of their coaches. And you can't get Monty Williams, so you get his assistant, Willie Green. And then the last part, the last box that he checks, Willie Green, other than being a former player, being a young coach, coming from the Monty Williams coaching tree, that's now become a popular thing. The fourth box he checks is that he's the opposite of Stan Van Gundy. And I say this all the time, that when you fire somebody, you hire a replacement that is the opposite of them. Otherwise, why did you fire them? If you got rid of somebody because you thought, like, he's not a people person, you're not going to hire somebody who also is not a people's person. Now, you just realize, like, that didn't really work. We're looking for something different. So you go hire something different. In football, it happens more frequently in football because it's more obvious. In football, you'll fire an offensive coach. You think, all right, well, that didn't work. Now we're going to go need a defensive coach. Didn't work when we've concentrated on offense. Our defense is terrible. Let's go get our defense up to par, get a defensive coach in here. Or the classic players coach, non-players coach. Oh, that coach was too tough. Let's get somebody who will be more of a player-friendly coach, or vice versa. And that's the case here. Stan Van Gundy was considered a tough coach, a little bit of an old-school coach, certainly older and tough on the guys. He gets fired. They think, okay, we have to go get the opposite now. That didn't work. Let's get the opposite. Well, what's the opposite of Stan Van Gundy? Willie Green. He's young. Has never been a coach before, played in the league. These are all the opposites of Van Gundy. Van Gundy was a longtime coach, maybe set in his ways, never played in the NBA, older coach, tough on the guys. Willie Green comes from the Monty Williams coaching tree, right? More of a player's coach, younger, played in the league, not as tough. He's a player's coach. He's never done it before. He doesn't have any maybe bad habits he can't get him out of. He could be maybe a little more controlled by the front office. He's the opposite of Stan Van Gundy. So he checks those four boxes. It's why the Pelicans are interested in somebody like Willie Green. But the Pelicans better hope this works out because it could very well be the last chance to make things work with Zion Williamson. We already have reports of Zion and his family, at least, being unhappy in New Orleans. We have the little scuttlebutt about, you know, maybe wanting to get to New York someday. Ooh, Knicks fans could only dream. But this is now his third coach in 3 years. And if this doesn't work out as well, it's like, well, then what are we doing here? Right? Say he only lasts a year. I wouldn't think they would do that because it doesn't reflect well on a team when you fire a coach. Right, 3 straight years, nobody's going to want to coach there. Let's say Willie Green only lasts 2 years. Zion Williamson's contract is for 5 years. What if you get to a fourth coach in those 5 years? And then it's like, okay, this is ridiculous. I got to get out of here. So the Pelicans better hope that Willie Green does work because it could be the last chance for Zion. And even with all those boxes that he checks, as I mentioned, it's still a risk to count on somebody who has never done it before, especially when you're talking about a star like Zion Williamson. Right, a franchise player that you want to make sure is happy and will be there for the long run. You better make sure you get this hire right. And it can be hard to rely on someone who's never done it before. That doesn't mean that guys should never get an opportunity without the experience. But think about yourself. And basketball or sports in general, they're not life and death. Contrary to what we all believe, right? It's not life and death. But Think about if you have to get a surgery and say it's not a life-saving surgery, but it's still a surgery. Right? Do you want a doctor who's never done it before? He went to medical school. Right? He's licensed. He's got his diploma on the wall and his license, his degree, all that sort of stuff. But still, he's like, I've never done this before. You'll be my first. You know, do you feel comfortable in that situation, or do you prefer to have a doctor that is very much experienced? If you have a court case, same idea. And you may not be going on death row. It may not be life or death, but it's a serious court case. Right? Do you want a lawyer? Do you want Joe Pesci and my cousin Vinny, who's never been in a courtroom before, or do you want someone with a little experience? Do you feel a little more comfortable? The guy with experience, yeah, I think he can figure it out. I think he can handle this. And basketball is not as serious as going to court for a serious situation or going onto the operating table. But for the Pelicans, this is serious business because this is what they are. They're a basketball team trying to win and trying to produce stars. And they have one with Zion Williamson. They have to make sure they now win and keep that star happy. And they're putting their eggs in the basket of Willie Green, somebody who has never been a head coach before. Younger guy, has been assistant for a handful of years, playing in the league. We'll see if it works out. Very well could. He checks all the boxes, but there's still always that concern. You know, you get on the back of a motorcycle. Your buddy has a motorcycle. He's never ridden it before. As you're going down the road, in the back of your mind, there's probably a little bit of concern. Like, wait a minute, does he know what he's doing? Are we safe? Should I be wearing a helmet right now? As opposed to somebody who has a lot of experience doing it, you think, okay, he knows what he's doing. He's done this before. But Willie Green brought in to be the next coach of the Pelicans. And for their sake, they better hope it works out. Coming up, pretenders or contenders in the upcoming NFL season? Look at that when we come back. But I got another pair of tickets to give away to the Charleston River Dogs. Their game on Thursday. This Thursday, two nights from now, it's a thirsty Thursday. Good baseball, first place team, hopefully a nice night, and cheap beer. You can't beat it. We'll give away these two tickets now. Third caller, you get the two tickets for Thursday's game. 843-721-9500. 843-721-9500. Third caller now will give you a pair of tickets to the River Dogs game this Thursday. It's the More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Fun, a funky finish to your Tuesday afternoon here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. You can look for our podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. Just simply search ESPN Radio Charleston. You can also find the show on demand by heading on over to charlestonsportsradio.com, clicking on our show page, and finding the podcast there. Or you could download our free app, ESPN Charleston. Just search that in the App Store, ESPN Charleston, and the podcasts are available through the app. Congratulations to our winner, Adam, in Somerville. We got a pair of tickets to the River Dogs game this Thursday night. We'll be giving away more tickets for River Dogs games throughout this week, so stay tuned for that in case you were not a big winner today. And the other reminder I have to give you is that you can always take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just simply stream us online, charlestonsportsradio.com. Also, through TuneIn Radio, you can tell your smart speaker to play the show. Or, again, download that free app, ESPN Charleston, and listen on the app. Leierle's Dry Cleaners, now their to-go service is easier than ever before. They can pick up or deliver right to your home or office. They handle shirts, suits, and casual wear, as well as curtains, comforters, and regular old household laundry. Call or text them, 843-377-6994 to schedule a free pickup. I mentioned that you heard about Leierle's right here on ESPN Radio Charleston and get 20% off your next order. You can even track your dry cleaning, see exactly when it'll be ready or delivered now with Leierle's to go. Leierle's Dry Cleaners, easier than ever before. The NFL season will be here before you know it. Let's run through before we go here today. And by the way, on the show tomorrow, we'll get into some of the recruiting with the Gamecocks and Clemson. Can Dabo Swinney maintain what Clemson has done? We'll get to all that tomorrow on the show. Plus, we'll talk some golf as we do every Wednesday with Jeremy Schilling. We'll have a former big league player, this time a former Atlanta Brave, join us to talk about their career and what's going on with the Braves this year and everything else. Got plenty to do once again on the show tomorrow. But before we go today, some pretenders or contenders when it comes to the upcoming NFL season. You know, the NFL is interesting. You always have a certain number of teams that can win it. The NFL is great because when you go into the season, every team feels like they have a chance. Now, by the end of September, a lot of teams will feel different. But at least to start the year, all fan bases, you all think, oh, this is our year, right? Because we see teams turn it around every offseason, go from last place to first place. A lot of times we don't predict those teams to be the ones to turn it around. But when it comes to actually winning the Super Bowl, usually there are only about eight teams to choose from that are real Super Bowl contenders. So as we run through a few teams, pretender or contender, I don't know how many of these teams could actually compete for a Super Bowl. So when I say contender, it will be more for, like, say, a playoff spot or winning a few playoff games. Will they be competitive? Will they be one of the better teams? Because as we run through these teams, I'll mention the ones that I do or don't think could actually win a Super Bowl. I'm not sure how many of these will. But we have our team list of a few teams in the NFL this year, about seven teams. I'll let you know if they're a pretender or a contender.
The Las Vegas Raiders.
The Raiders are a pretender to me. Now, they have improved all 3 years so far under Gruden, but have yet to have a winning season. And in those 3 years under Gruden, defensively, they have been bottom five all 3 years. They fired their defensive coordinator this past season. They brought in a new one. We'll see if that turns things around. They do have some weapons, especially on offense. Right, Derek Carr is better than a lot of people think. They've drafted some young wide receivers. Obviously, they have Darren Waller. But the Raiders, and now they'll have fans actually be able to come into their new stadium. That could help with a home field advantage. But I just don't see the Raiders get over the hump. I think they'll have a winning season. But if we're talking contenders, I don't think they're even a playoff team this year. Especially you look at that division. You have the Chiefs. The Chargers, I think, will be improved this year. Even the Broncos may have a little bit of a better season. So the Raiders, I think they will be a pretender once again this year.
Los Angeles Chargers.
All right, the Chargers are a contender. Now, they're 7-9 last year, but it could have been a lot better. They lost a bunch of one-score games. That led to the dismissal of Anthony Lynn. My one concern for the Chargers is that they have a first-time head coach who's only been coaching in the NFL for a couple of years. He's very young, and he's on the defensive side of the football. Now, Bill Belichick's a defensive coach, right? Mike Tomlin's a defensive coach. But we've seen in recent years the trend has gone to offensive coaches. A lot of the new coaches winning in the NFL have been on offense because the sport has gone offensive. So you have a new coach who's a first-time head coach. I believe he's still in his 30s, right? Late 30s. Brandon Staley, defensive coach, first-time coach, in his 30s, young guy. Is it an upgrade over Anthony Lynn? Anthony Lynn was not a good head coach, but we have no idea how good Staley will be. He may end up being one of the best coaches in the league. He may end up being a train wreck. So that will play a big role because for the last couple of years, the Chargers have had plenty of talent, but they have found so many ways to lose games. And we blame that on Anthony Lynn. But will the young first-time head coach be that much better? We'll see. If he's just an average head coach, I think the Chargers could be really good this year. I think they have a lot of talent. Justin Herbert was really good as a rookie. He should only get better as a second-year player. They got a lot of offensive weapons, targets for him to throw to. They have multiple backs. If Austin Eckler can stay healthy this year, Derwin James should hopefully be back on defense. The Chargers' issues have been injuries and losing one-possession games. They hope that the coaching change will solve the one-possession games. Injuries, you just hope for better luck. But if L.A. can stay healthy this year, I think they could be really good with Justin Herbert. I think they win double-digit games this year. I think they're a playoff team. I don't think they're too far behind the Chiefs. I think the Chargers are a contender.
Miami Dolphins.
The Miami Dolphins. The Miami Dolphins are, I'll say a contender. I'm torn on the Dolphins. Look, they won 10 games last year, almost made the playoffs. But now they lose their safety blanket in Ryan Fitzpatrick. And I like what Brian Flores is building in Miami. They've been getting better. He's a defensive coach. That defense was really good last year. But there was also some flukiness to it for the Dolphins. They led the league in turnovers. I've done a segment on the show before where we've looked at that category and how the teams really take a step back the following year. Right? Like the Chicago Bears. When the Bears were really good a couple years ago and that dominant defense, it was because they were getting turnovers. Then they stopped getting turnovers. They've been a 500 team. The Jaguars, when they went to the AFC title game, They were top three in the league in forced turnovers. That's why their defense was so dominant, right? Saxonville, as they called themselves. And then after that year, they weren't getting turnovers. And Blake Bortles looked like he turned back into the pumpkin he was. And the Jaguars have been under 500. You can't rely on turnovers. The Dolphins did last year. They led the league in forced turnovers. I don't think that will happen this year. So I don't think the defense will be as good for Miami. Then you lose Ryan Fitzpatrick. It's now on Tua. I'm not a Tua guy when it comes to the NFL. I don't think he'll be a great NFL quarterback. I was not impressed with him his first year. So I think the Dolphins may take a step back on offense just at the quarterback position. You don't have Fitzpatrick. So with that said, I may be convincing myself that they're actually a pretender because I think the Patriots will be better this year. The Bills are still in that division. Can the Dolphins do better than 10 wins last year without Ryan Fitzpatrick or the forced turnovers? I'll stick with my guns and say contender, but I'm not overly confident. The Dolphins need some things to go their way this year to win more than those 10 games and try to actually get into the playoffs this season.
The New England Patriots.
All right, just mention the Patriots. The Patriots, I think, are a contender this year. I think the Patriots will be better this year. There are some real positive reports coming out about Mac Jones. I don't know how much we should buy into that. But the quarterback is the big question to me. Look, last year with Cam Newton at quarterback, the Patriots were 7-9. They were almost 500. Cam was not good last year. He had a couple of good games, started off the season pretty strong. Then he came down with COVID, was not the same the rest of the year. And there were all sorts of stats, right? Like I think Josh Allen had as many touchdowns at Gillette than Cam Newton did last season. And Josh Allen played one game there. I think it was Josh Allen. There was some quarterback that had a 4-touchdown game at the Patriots Stadium, and that's as many touchdowns as Cam Newton had at home all year. So the Patriots lost more defensive starters last year because of the pandemic than any other team, and they did not have a good enough quarterback, and yet they weren't as bad as we thought because you look at the standings, they were 7-9. I mean, they're pretty much a 500 team. So now this year, you get those defensive starters back. Second year for Cam Newton. You have Mac Jones. If you get better production from the quarterback spot. Oh, and by the way, of course, the Patriots spent more money this offseason than any other year under Bill Belichick. They went out and added a lot of pieces. They brought in two tight ends, Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith, who are both really good. Cam Newton has always loved throwing two tight ends. Maybe that will help. The Patriots have had good tight ends with Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez there before his troubles. So the Patriots, I do think, take a step forward this year. I think they will be a contender in the AFC East.
The Chicago Bears.
The Bears are pretenders. I think Justin Fields, like I'm a Vikings fan, so I was very disappointed that Justin Fields wound up in Chicago because I do think he will be a good NFL quarterback. But I can't count on it yet in year one. I don't even know if he'll be starting week one. And if he comes in midseason, I'm not going to expect Justin Fields to turn things around to save that team or in half a year turn the Bears into contenders. They were a 500 team last year that snuck into the playoffs. Matt Nagy's on the hot seat. We'll figure out that quarterback position. But outside of Allen Robinson, they don't have a ton of playmakers. The defense has been getting worse each year. And I look at that division. I expect Aaron Rodgers to be back in Green Bay. The Packers will be the favorites in the North. I think the Vikings, call me biased, but I think the Vikings will be much improved this year. They totally revamped their defense this year. They made some great moves this offseason. They bolstered their offensive line. It is a really good roster on paper in Minnesota. I think the Vikings will be improved. I think the Bears will be the third best team in that division. They still are figuring out the quarterback position. I don't know if they even have the right head coach with Matt Nagy, who's coaching for his job. The Bears, they will be pretenders.
The Dallas Cowboys.
The Cowboys are always tough to predict. And they're this team that, I say this all the time when talking about the Cowboys, no matter what they do the year before or that offseason, they always come in with Super Bowl aspirations and Super Bowl expectations. But they were 6-10 last year. Now, of course, Dak Prescott only played in 6 games. He should be healthy this year. Reports are Ezekiel Elliott has lost some weight, that he's in the best shape he's been in years, that he looks quicker than he has in a long time, that he's been faster, he's healthier, he's skinnier. Ezekiel Elliott has really fallen off the last couple years. We'll see what type of year they get out of him. Then you have one of the better duos with the wide receivers. The problem for the Cowboys, though, of course, was their defense last year. It was historically bad. And when you look at that defense, they bring in Dan Quinn, who will try to turn things around. We know he's not a very good head coach. We'll see about defensive coordinator going back to his days in Seattle. But the Cowboys, the big thing is they have to improve their defense. I didn't think they had a great draft. They didn't do a whole lot in the offseason. They bring in a new defensive coordinator. How much better will their defense be? Because their offense should be able to score points. Will they be able to stop anyone? You also have Mike McCarthy on the hot seat. You have the drama that always surrounds the organization. And you also have Hard Knocks coming to town. And if you go back and look, I think it's five of the last six teams on Hard Knocks not only failed to make the playoffs, but also like fired their coaches within 2 years. The teams that go on Hard Knocks, that usually does not set them up for success. So the Cowboys have to deal with that this year as well. But I look at the NFC East. I think Washington will be good. I think the Giants will be better this year. But that division still is pretty wide open. So could the Cowboys be a contender for a Super Bowl this year? No, I don't think so. I don't think they could even win a playoff game. But could they get to the playoffs? Could they win the NFC East? Potentially. That division could be so bad that, we get a team. Last year, Washington football team made the playoffs at 7-9. Could we get another division winner this year who is, 10-7? I think so. And can the Cowboys win 10 games? Well, you get two against the Eagles. Those should be gimmies. You split against the other teams. You're almost halfway there from your own division. So, long story short, I'll say a contender for Dallas in terms of getting to the playoffs or contending for their division. But if we're talking Super Bowl, no, they would be a pretender. I don't think this Cowboys team is close to being a Super Bowl team. Do we have any others? One more? What do we got?
The New York Giants.
Ah, the Giants. I just mentioned them. The Giants, I'm going to say, are a contender. To win a Super Bowl, I don't know. But I do think the Giants, they're actually my pick to win the division. And it will come down to Daniel Jones this year because the Giants have all the other pieces. Dave Gettleman has done a good job putting that team together. The Giants had a top 10 defense a year ago. Their problem was offense, mostly with Daniel Jones. But they went out and got him more weapons. He had a Pro Bowl tight end on the roster last year. Then they went out and got Kyle Rudolph, a former Pro Bowl tight end. You have two Pro Bowl tight ends. At the wide receiver position, they drafted Tony this offseason. They went out and signed Galladay from Detroit, who I think is really good. All right, they added more pieces at the wide receiver position. The offensive line is solid. So Daniel Jones has no more excuses. And if he doesn't play well this year, he'll be out of New York. He'll be out of a job. He may be out of the league. I don't know if other, he'll be a backup. I don't know if other teams would take a chance on him. Daniel Jones needs to play well, and he has all the pieces around him in order to do so. The Washington football team, I'm concerned with Ryan Fitzpatrick. You know, the Washington football team defense is great. And the reason why they were successful with Alex Smith was because he took care of the football. But Ryan Fitzpatrick is the opposite. He does not take care of the football. That would be my concern. Is he going to turn it over a bunch this year? If he does, that will really hurt the football team's chances. I think the Giants actually win the NFC East, so I'll call them a contender. But again, with the caveat that they're not going to contend for a Super Bowl. Daniel Jones will not win a Super Bowl this year. But they, I think, will win the division. I could see them maybe even, you win a home playoff game being a division champ. Maybe they win a game in the playoffs. So I'll call them a contender. But in terms of the Super Bowl, nah, they're not going to win the Super Bowl this year. The Super Bowl champ is not going to come out of the NFC East. I feel pretty confident saying that. And there you go. Our pretenders or contenders in the NFL for this upcoming season. Brad on Twitter said that Major League Baseball needs to bring back the universal DH. I agree. I touched earlier on the Rob Manfred press conference today in which he spoke about some of the rule changes for Major League Baseball. That's another one. Get rid of seven-inning doubleheaders. Get rid of the runner at second base in extra innings. And get rid of pitchers batting. Bring the universal DH to baseball. I thought it was great last year. I think it'd be good moving forward. We'll see what sort of changes Major League Baseball brings this offseason. But it looks like a few are on the way. The All-Star Game is tonight. You can hear it right here on ESPN Radio Charleston. And if anything noteworthy happens, we'll talk about it on the air tomorrow. The Midsummer Classic. Though they don't feel like classics as much as the old ones, as the actual classics. We'll see what tonight brings. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we have to say goodbye. But we'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. It's the More Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.